When Irish eyes are smiling.
Welcome to podleaders.com. I am your host, Tom Raftery.
Scene one, Apple, take two.
All right. When Irish eyes are smiling.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this edition of Pod Leaders. I'm your host, Tom Raftery. Today's singing guest on the show is none other than Mark Cantor of Broadband Mechanics. First off, Mark, thanks for coming on the show.
Great. I'm happy to be here.
Good stuff. Good stuff. Mark, before we go into the full interview, could you give a quick who is Mark Cantor and what you do roughly?
Okay, I started a little company called Macromind back in 1984,
right,
and that evolved into Macromedia.
Uh-huh.
And so we were the people who invented the first multimedia player, multimedia authoring system, cross-platform authoring system, and kind of helped give birth to what was then called multimedia.
Right, that's director, is it?
Yeah, and a bunch of other stuff. And then I retired in 92,
right,
and I started an interactive music video band called the Media Band.
Uh-huh.
And we pushed the envelope more and experimented with scalable content and rich media interfaces and eventually built a cyber-themed restaurant called the Media Bar.
Right.
And that was in my home in San Francisco. And then got into building basically interactive TV systems throughout the late 90s. Waiting for the world to catch up with all the factors in place,
sure,
for what we now call digital lifestyle aggregation.
Right.
So now that we have the web 2.0 and we've got broadband and we've got open source and companies desperate enough to take a risk,
yeah,
we can now consult and build on what we call digital lifestyle aggregation.
Okay. And what is digital lifestyle aggregation?
Well, what we think of it is a promulgation of five different tenets. The idea is you combine social networking with blogging.
Yeah.
Along with communications, mobile services, and media and device management. So that's pretty much a catch-all of everything you want to do, which would more or less create portals 2.0. You know, portals for the web 2.0.
Uh-huh.
And each of the clients we go to, well, they look at Yahoo 360 and they look at MySpace and they're kind of envious. And about half of our clients, we design and strategize with them.
Right.
And then deliver designs for them. Whereas the second half of the clients, we actually go and build these designs.
Interesting. How did your interest in this digital lifestyle aggregation arise? I mean, you talked about you had a band and you started getting into multimedia and the band. How did that progression go on to the whole digital lifestyle aggregation?
Well, what happened was is that I was able to go and do applied research and not be locked into having to make a product and ship something. So I was doing more or less what the big expensive research labs were doing, but I was doing it on my own with my own money. And it allowed me to go down a path and discover something and learn something and then draw the line there and say, okay, well, I can't afford to pay for this anymore, and I'd go back and start over again.
Right.
So we figured out what rich media interfaces were about and how to attach databases to things and eventually even figured out all the online media stuff and painfully learned our lessons throughout the 90s that HTML really kind of sucked and that we needed something much better and that we really needed broadband. And so all along I'm pitching these features and this functionality to my clients, but no one was willing to take a chance. Even the telcos, who supposedly were building interactive TV, were not. So along comes the blogosphere and these various open standards, and we kind of stood back and just watched as the open source stuff evolved and, you know, what's now called Ajax and, uh-huh. you know, whole new models have arisen. And what's happened is that it's been about 10 years since portals have had any sort of innovation.
Yeah.
And, you know, AOL and Yahoo did such a good job at it that, you know, it stifled all the competition.
Yeah.
So just imagine if I went to Richard Branson and Virgin, if I went to Rupert Murdoch and Sky, and I said, well, you know, you're not going to want to lock yourselves into Microsoft's vice. Steve Jobs won't have anything to do with you. What's your choice? You've got to have a compelling online experience for your end users. So these are who our customers are, people who have to participate in the online experience, want to present a compelling new experience to their end users. And so what is the latest, hottest stuff they can do? So again, half of the work we're doing is providing consulting, but for me, all roads lead to this notion of a hub, a new kind of way station that connects together all your various accounts on the web and allows for identity management and structured blogging and new kinds of aggregation and all sorts of cutting-edge stuff. And what we're doing is we're building these customs for each client, and thereby each client can focus on their own context, which is important to them.
Okay.
So, for instance, we did a system for Ziff Davis that was called OneUp.com.
Uh-huh.
And that was for video gamers. And then we were working on a system in Paris that was sort of like the Netflix of France, and that was for movie buffs. And, you know, you can just see over and over again that we're focusing on various particular, shall we call them, vertical niches.
Yeah. You mentioned there structured blogging.
Yeah, one of the things that's also at the foundation of a digital lifestyle aggregation is the notion of open standards.
Yeah.
So I, as a marketing vehicle, go off and help create and promulgate these open standards. So earlier this year, we did something called ourmedia.org.
Oh, yeah.
And recently, last week, we announced structuredblogging.org.
Yeah.
So these are organizations that are nonprofits that Broadband Mechanics actually does the work for to build. In the case of our media, we actually paid for it ourselves, whereas with structured blogging, was paid for by PubSub.
Right. Now, I'm familiar with our media. I know it's a way that you can, for instance, upload MP3 files to archive.org. What else does our media do?
Well, our media is a general a front-end community to the Internet Archive. And so what we were noticing was that there was all this great stuff going into the Internet Archive, but nothing was coming out.
Right.
And that was because the user interface was very clumsy and it was very hard for people to discover. And more importantly, that there wasn't really a community of developers all sharing their data. So what we did was with our media is that we created a front-end community. You can blog, there are groups, there are message boards. And I won't say overnight, but within 6 months, we doubled the bandwidth of the Internet Archive.
Right.
So the idea is that people now are not only loading things into the archive, but they're actually linking out, they're getting those links out, and they're blogging them. And people are starting to use the bandwidth and the storage more effectively.
Okay.
So the idea of our media is it's a community of place for people to store their media, whether it's audio, video, images, even text files. And we just went super hog wild on the various metadata that we attach to each file so that if someone is really into it and they want to attach all this information about their media, they can.
Very good. Is it possible, I haven't looked at our media for a while, is it possible for people who upload to our or through our media to get stats back on the files that have been uploaded?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we have individual stats, no.
Okay.
See, the thing is, you know, it's I spent a lot of my own money on it, and we've been pitching others to help fund it.
Yep.
So as soon as there's more money, we can do that sort of stuff.
Great. I had Salim on the show there last week for two interviews, and he was fabulous. He was really, really impressive and interesting. You talked a lot about structured blogging and where enterprises are going to go with the publish and subscribe model as opposed to the current data model. And you did your announcement on Tuesday and that went very well. I noticed, and you're probably going to rail at this now, but I noticed Paul Kedrowski, if that's how you pronounce his name, wrote up on his blog that structured blogging is going to fail because people are lazy. I saw you reacted to that on your blog, but could you give me a reaction here on the show to if you think he's right or if you think he's wrong, why you think he's wrong?
Well, the Irish government went and figured out that if they lowered taxes for companies that all these American and European companies would come to Ireland and set up shop and revitalize the Irish economy.
Yeah.
And it worked, correct?
Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And so one wouldn't accuse Irish people of being lazy, right?
Yeah.
You could just say that there was no inherent Irish capitalism and there was no entrepreneurialism and that it took these artificial insertion of these exterior companies to come in to revitalize the Irish economy. My attitude towards anybody who poo-poos human behavior and who claims that people won't do something is probably looking at the present.
Right.
And there's nothing wrong with that, but my job is to create the future. And if we sat around all day long convincing ourselves that nobody would use anything, then nothing would ever happen.
Yeah.
So the answer is very simple. Paul can, first of all, let me just point out that in my blog post, I analyzed that Paul probably has an investment in some company that attempts to automatically discern structure and content. There are a bunch of these lame brain venture capital fund companies out there, and I wouldn't doubt that if Paul was one of those investors in one of those companies, because I mean, to poo-poo the notion of structured content is absurd. I mean, there's no foundation.
Sure.
Now, you can look at human behavior and claim that humans won't do it, but that just means that other humans will. See, the way I look at it is that 10 times more people will write reviews than will ever blog. Blogging is for the intelligentsia. Blogging is for someone who has something to say. But the normal everyman wants to talk about the football match or their favorite beer, their favorite car mechanic, or movie.
Yeah.
And that's when this stuff, this personal publishing stuff, this blogging stuff, really starts to move down the pyramid into the realm of the mainstream.
Okay. I use WordPress on my blogs. And I downloaded the plugin for WordPress, the structured blogging plugin for WordPress. But looking at, for instance, the audio part of it, as that would be the part that would interest me most as a podcast producer, there seems to be a lot of fields to fill in. Now, that's fine. I'm just curious, looking at all the fields there, how many of those actually need to be filled in? Do any of them? Do all of them?
No, none of them. No.
None of them need to be filled in. Okay.
No.
So
you should go take a look at our media, and you should see how many fields we have there.
Yeah, I have done. I have done. Right. It's been a while, but I have done.
Yeah, there's something like 75 fields in our media.
Yeah.
So the issue of putting a length or, the bit rate or things like that, I mean, some nerds want to do that.
Okay. If I fill out these fields, or most of them, will they appear in the post that people read through the browser, or are they just published in XML for XML aggregators to read?
Yeah, so it turns out that, this is source code, and so anyone could elevate those fields up. I do believe that most of the metadata does display itself. There might be some metadata that doesn't. I don't have off the top of my head the exact details of which is which. You should just go try it out. I believe it will display all that metadata. I should also point out that it's displaying in a very generic CSS style sheet, because we've been assuming that people want to put in their own style sheets.
Right.
So we're trying to keep this thing as flat as possible and not put any requirements in. It's just source code. And if anything, it's about synchronizing and agreeing to a series of schemas so that we can all stay in sync.
Sure.
That's the real effort behind structured blogging. The fact that it can be used as an end user's tool or an extension to WordPress or movable type just makes it convenient. We plan on putting out code libraries for all the other major languages. And the notion here is that it's a compatibility box. So regardless of the variant or flavor of schema that you have, we'll provide APIs to actually allow people to convert from one to the other.
Okay. The WordPress plugin, is that compatible with WordPress 2, or will it need to be upgraded when WordPress 2 ships? WordPress 2 is in release candidate 2 at the moment.
Yeah, we have tested it with it. We're pretty sure it'll be compatible.
Cool, good, good.
Now realize that we're putting out new versions at least once a week.
Yeah, yeah.
So, because we're finding bugs. You know, see, this is a code review. This is a peer review phase, right?
Yeah.
So we're finding bugs, and if the schemas need to be tweaked or modified, we will. So that was the whole point of the announcement.
Sure. Is there a feedback mechanism in place? I mean, if I roll this out on my Podleaders site and I find a bug, do I go to the structured blogging site to give you feedback on it?
Yeah, our programmers are taking those emails as we call. As we speak.
Good, good, good.
Operator standing by.
I put up a post, Mark, on my site a few days ago saying that I was going to be having a chat with you, and I put a call out to people to ask if they had any questions that they'd like me to ask you. Do you mind taking a few questions of some of my readers?
I'd be honored.
Super, super. A guy called Frank P, left a question. He wants to know, as co-founder of Macromind, now known as Macromedia, what is your view on the acquisition of Macromedia by Adobe?
Well, you know, if you right-click on a Flash object and try to copy it, paste it into your blog post, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And Macromedia has long claimed that Flash is the place that you can put your content into so no one can get at it. And Adobe also promotes PDF as a place to put your content in so it'll be safe so no one can steal it.
Yeah.
So I think it's the perfect case of two mating dinosaurs. You know, clearly they are all full of shit and they need to go to hell as far as I'm concerned. Now, did that communicate properly how I feel?
I don't know. I'm trying to read between the lines there.
Yeah, these are slime balls, born and raised.
Okay. Okay, we'll move on. Another reader, a guy called Damien. Damien wants to know, with structured blogging possibly going to realize the dream of a distributed internet and distributed content, how will it be preserved? As in, if a site with a lot of content goes down, is it stored on the site that aggregates the content? What if that goes down, or will it be stored at archive.org?
Yeah. Okay. So, first of all, people like PubSub and Technorati spend their lives and careers spidering through the web. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, Technorati goes and actually gets the data and stores it on their hard drives, whereas PubSub simply takes the feeds and cross-references. So there will be a number of companies, including Yahoo and Google, that will be grabbing this content and storing it. I don't believe that's what the Internet Archive will be doing, mainly because they're off doing media stuff. This is mainly text.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, don't think that structured blogging is somehow the solution to everything. Structured blogging is the grease that greases the skids. You know, it's the thing that makes sure that things happen. But it itself will not be anything more than a very flat infrastructure which will enable all these vendors to do it. So it's still up to the vendors to provide these features and compelling experiences.
What about modifying the content? Again, another question from Damien. If I later change the content, how do I ensure that someone that hoovered it up will take and honor the latest edit?
You're not. You're not guaranteed anything. So, you know, we ping-o-matic, we ping the various systems, and maybe they pick it up, maybe they don't. But there's no guarantees in life.
Okay. Damien, again, won't you need servers with a lot of processing power to run these distributed content sites? As in, before we could simply host a page, a simple page, but now each page could be made up of hundreds of bits of micro-content, which all need to be monitored for any changes. Wouldn't this be a processor and bandwidth hog?
Wow. Okay, so what he's implying is that all the micro-content has to appear all the time on every page. So that clearly isn't true. So the idea is that... excuse me. I have a coffee review site.
Yeah.
It is scarfing up every review of every coffee house on the planet Earth, right? Well, first of all, if it's all text, every review of every coffee house on the planet Earth is the size of one video file, okay? So you're not talking a lot of bandwidth, and you're not talking a lot of processor speed when these reviews and things are text, okay? It's only when they're video do you have heavy lifting scenarios. The second is that... the content stays where it is, right? So there's no requirement that you have to store the content anywhere else but then your servers, right?
Yeah.
So if it will be sort of like the way Technorati Tags works right now. If you go over to the Technorati Tags page, it is simply pointing to where all this stuff is. So there's no requirement that this poor little server's got to go there and pull this stuff in every time you update a page. Now, someone could write code to do that, and clearly Damien is a bit of a naive hacker because that's not good written code. You cache the code. You don't go and pull data every time you update a page. You cache it. You only bring it in when you need it. And so at no time would you ever need a processor intensive, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. Another question. You have your finger in many pies. Apart from cloning your fingers, how do you keep track of it all? Is there a lot of switching? How do you balance it and your family life, which from your blog we can see is hugely important to you? Do you subscribe to the getting things done regime?
I do about 100 hours a week of work.
Okay.
I take my family with me about every third trip.
Okay. Very good.
I sleep 4 hours a night.
Four?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm a 25-year workaholic entrepreneur.
Right.
And, you know, I date back to the early 80s, right? So I've been doing this stuff for a while. So it's baked into my DNA at this point. I can't think small. I can't do a little amount of stuff. I have to do a lot of stuff.
Right.
So we use wikis. We use mail lists. I use my email prodigiously. And actually, when I'm out on the road, I even get more work done because I'm all jet-lagged and can't sleep, and I just sit in my hotel room and work. I have about 275 feeds in my aggregator. So it's that stuff that actually I fall behind on.
Yeah.
Keeping up on the blog, though at this very moment I'm actually on top of it. So, and that's what my clients pay for, by the way. They pay for me staying on top of the industry and,
Yeah. Okay. Another question. Damien has been prolific with his questions. Your organization is multicultural and multinational. You're employing a lot of people in India. How is this working for you? Is it just about saving money, and how do you go about recruiting people there?
Oh, I was just totally blessed.
Yep.
Yeah, these young guys called me up, and they said they wanted to work for me, and I said, hey, why don't you go off and prove to me that you're worth me paying attention to?
Right.
And they did. And then they did some work on our media. And they did that pro bono.
Right.
And at that point, I started working with them. So I was very, very lucky. They are both ex-Microsoft guys, graduates of IIT in India. And, went back to India after 5 years at Microsoft. And they're really amazing people, and I'm really blessed to know them.
Wow. That's a great story. Damien's final question, which I think is a bit tongue-in-cheek, he wants to know, how are the silk shirts?
how the silk shirts. Well, if you look at the photographs from Paris,
yeah.
I was wearing this shimmering amber gold thing.
I was there. I saw it in person.
That was one of them.
Yeah.
That was one of them.
I think his question is more, how are they? How do they feel? What are they like on?
Oh, they're lovely.
Okay. I had another question from a guy called Jerry. It was more for Salim, but seeing as Salim isn't here, I'll throw it your direction. Jerry was reading through the and listening to the podcast Salim put up, and he was curious about things like HR XML for CVs and resumes and that kind of thing. And he's wondering, how do we find existing schemas for XML? So if there are schemas out there for, say, creating invoices or payslips or whatever, is there a central place where they're...
Well, he's going to have to learn about Google.
Sure.
I think I could safely say that there are a couple of XML schemas out on the web.
Yeah.
You know, I could fire up Google right now, type in XML schema, and probably get back, you know, several million hit results, right?
Yeah.
So let's see. XML schema. Yeah, 13,600,000. So, yeah, what was his name? Jerry? He's going to have to do his own work for himself.
You know? I think a concern that Jerry has really, though, is around...
standard.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, why doesn't it go in and type... What was it? Invoice?
Yep.
Let's see. So let's go... I'm going to type in XML schema plus invoice plus standard, okay? And I get back, I'm easily 41,500 hits. So he'll have to go through those and figure out which schema he believes in, which standard he believes in. I can tell you that the open office world wants to use XML file formats as their way to do interchange. And see, the thing is, when you talk about schemas, that implies that there's interchange between apps. And so then it makes more sense to go to go to QuickBooks and to Great Plains software and to, you know, NetSuite.
Yeah.
And find out what their formats are, because standards are only relevant as they're deployed and supported by products out in the marketplace.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. And I think Jerry's coming from a background of where he's trying to produce a product, and he's not sure which...
Then he should go to Great Plains and NetSuite, and he should reverse engineer those schemas and make sure that he imports and exports in those formats, and that's what matters.
Right. Okay.
And I think what he'll find is a common notion, and he should go off and participate in the various mail lists and the various standards efforts that go on around the world and ask those naive questions. You see, I'm focused on microcontent and media, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I could talk forever about that, but invoices, I don't lose too much sleep on. You know?
Back to my own questions again. You mentioned earlier that your job is to look to the future. You have a couple of daughters. I have a 2.5-year-old son. I was thinking back earlier today, looking back at the world of about 15 years ago, there was no web. There was very few mobile phones. What do you think the world is going to be like for our kids in 15 years' time?
I don't play that game. I'm not a visionary like that. I'm a guy that builds things that are going to happen. And the fact that they take 10 or 15 years... is the course of things. So I could relatively assure you that there will be persona editors normalizing all the differences of different websites, and that one will be able to copy and paste and move their data between all the systems that they have. And that'll take 5 or 7 years to get there. So I usually don't project out beyond that.
Right. Okay, fair enough.
Because I'm into actually building it and making it work rather than... you know, hallucinating.
Okay. Favorite gadgets. What gadgets turn you on?
In one sense, they turn me on. I use a Nokia 6630.
Right.
Which is common in Europe, but it's very uncommon here in the States.
Oh.
So that was a gift of Nokia. So I find myself with a state-of-the-art smartphone, which bedazzles most Americans.
Right.
I don't do anything with Apple on it, any Apple logo, but I do have a very simple SanDisk MP3 player.
Okay.
And I also carry around a little SanDisk thumb drive for my backup.
Ah, very good.
So that's what I do. And then I use a Sony Vaio, a T250, which is a very lightweight extended battery system, so I can work on long flights.
Uh-huh.
And I always travel with a journal.
A paper journal?
Yeah. And then I keep all my notes in that, and I transfer them onto the computer, back and forth.
At this point, Robert Scoble would be asking why you're not using a tablet PC.
That is on my list of the next computer I'm going to buy.
Ah, very good.
But see, I don't buy anything that's first generation. So I would never, tablet PCs are now going on their second and third generation.
Yeah.
So that's when I'll probably buy it.
You mentioned that you don't touch anything with an Apple logo on it. Is there a reason for that?
Yeah, they tried to put me out of business on numerous occasions. And being a Mac developer is a lose-lose scenario, because if you're successful and you come with a great idea, Apple steals it. And if you're not successful, you're out of business anyway. So there is no scenario of being a happy, successful, profitable Macintosh software developer, and that's what I am. And this is not to say that their user interface or their experiences aren't great, but it's the Williams and Sonoma, it's the BMW, it's the most expensive scenario you can pay for, and I'm not interested in that. I'm interested in what the average person uses. And so, when I talked to Steve Jobs, I told him, listen, for $2 million, we'll call it even. So, I mean, I've had grounds for lawsuits and whatever. I'm not into lawyers, but there's no way in hell I'm ever using Mac again. And people eventually realize that. Apple will figure out some way to screw users, and everyone will realize the true nature of Apple.
Right. One last thing. We have a very poor uptake in Ireland yet of blogging in the business community. It's probably down to a number of factors, but if you were to be asked by an Irish company why should they be blogging, what would you say to them?
Well, communication and sharing information between employees is really key to the success of a company, and there hasn't really been an effective way for employees to systematically communicate and let all their fellow colleagues know what they're doing.
Right.
Obviously those blogs are then published within a closed intranet, within the firewall. The information's all safe. But at least the information gets out as opposed to not.
Yeah. So you reckon for companies a good start would be to have an internal blog where people can talk to each other within the company?
Yeah, I'm working on this project. I need someone to help me do XYZ. Has anyone ever done this before? Even people who work on different floors of the same building don't communicate,
Yeah.
And this is the problem of management. There's no effective way to do that. So blogging becomes a really powerful tool to help management keep the employees in sync.
Very good. Nice one. I've been on most of the shows I've done, I've asked people for their opinions of why blogging is advantageous to companies, and I've got a different answer almost every time. I must go back through the interviews now and start aggregating the answers and put them up in a blog post. It's fascinating, people's different responses to that question. Anyway, that was my last question. Thanks a million.
All right, well, let me just give my one pitch about structured content, that, this is a new era of blogging.
Sure.
And blogging itself is the first kind of structured content, in that the permalink, the URL address of the blog post, encapsulates that single idea into a chunk. And that's great. But the text, the body of the post, is relegated to one text field, one block of text. And very often, what happens is, in the case, let's say, of an event, where I might have this event already structured in some other program, well, I've got to go take that structured data, things like the start time, the end time, the map, the price of the tickets, the description of the event, or the description of the artists who are performing. I'm going to take all that structured data, you know, the form, and slam it into one text field.
Yeah.
So this is the urgency of structured content and structured blogging, is to establish standards for structured content so that we don't lose that implied structure of an event, a review, a list, a person or group showcase, a media file. I mean, it's just criminal that we don't have metadata for this stuff. It's already 2006. So that's what we see as structured blogging, is the beginning of the new era of blogging.
Excellent. Okay, that was brilliant. Thanks a million, Mark.
Alrighty. Alrighty, dude.
Great. Thanks a million, Mark.
Ciao.
Scene 1, Apple, take 2.